Hi, and welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. I'm Joseph G. of Doraville.org, and we're here to talk about Georgia politics. We'll go around the table first and introduce ourselves, starting to my right.
This is Catherine from Blog for Democracy. It's nice to be here.
This is Joe Winter from JoeVentures.com.
This is Griff Drift from Drifting Through the Grift.
Great. Well, thank you guys for making it. Happy 2008. We've been gone for a little while, busy with the holidays and everything else in between, but we're back now, and so is the Georgia legislature, so we've got some things to talk about. First, though, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Senate race and some of the candidates that are in that, particularly Dale Cardwell, who was working on his platform earlier in January.
So to speak.
Catherine, you want to maybe kind of tell us what was going on?
Well, you know, I thought it was really an interesting concept. Mr. Cardwell climbed up the side of, what's it called?
Cory Smokestack.
Cory Smokestack, and sat on the platform up there, which is about a little over 300 feet in the air, for, I think he was up there for like a week.
Yeah.
And he determined that he was going to stay up there and live stream 24/7 until his message was heard. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that message was or how he was going to determine that it had been heard, but apparently it had been heard because came down a week later. And the unfortunate thing, I think, for Mr. Cardwell was that he managed to pick, until this weekend, the very coldest period of the last, you know, few months.
Yeah,
so it was very cold.
It doesn't say much about his ability to plan and to go up there on the coldest day of the year.
I didn't really watch the feed, but I, from what I heard, every time anyone looked, he was stuck in his little tent, you know, hiding away from the...
He was cocooned.
I saw him a few times up there. In fact, we drove by... the first night he was up there, just to kind of get a lay of the land to figure out what he was doing. And you couldn't really get to where he was. I mean, it was difficult to see him. We could see him, the platform up there. But yeah, I tuned in. I would look, you know, sort of occasionally throughout the day to see what he was doing. And most of the time he was, if he was out there, the wind was blowing. And
I wonder, where does this idea come from? I mean... First of all, I had flashbacks of Oral Roberts being called home if he didn't raise enough money. You know, I'm going to go up on the smokestack until people hear my message. I mean, does he even have a campaign staff? Does he have a manager that says, this might not be a good idea?
Well, he was working with, the boys, Bobby Kahn and those guys. But he fired them. Or they had a... parting of interest. I don't know if it was a financial situation or what, but shortly before he left them.
Maybe he walked in one day and said, hey, I'm thinking about going sitting on a smokestack, and they're like, see ya.
Maybe.
Yeah. Of course, there were the obligatory references that some commentators made about previous stunts that politicians of old made, like the walking across Georgia or bicycling backward.
Well, there was walking Lawton Childs in Florida, who was the governor of Florida. And we actually have
a... that too?
There's a guy, it's that same guy, McKinney, I think is his name. Not the famous McKinneys of DeKalb County, but McKinney down in Savannah, who says he's going to walk like... What's John Barrow in the 8th? Is he in the 8th? Anyway, John Barrow's district, he's going to run against John Barrow, and he's going to like walk to every town in the district. It's like 400 miles, right, that he's going
to
walk.
At least then you're talking to people. You're not up in a tower.
Yeah, I know. Well, like screaming down. It's like an SNL skit.
I think he was taking calls, though.
Yeah.
People were calling him. But I don't know. I mean, like you said, a couple times I tuned in, he was either in his tent or he was like yelling into a microphone and you couldn't hear what he was saying. I understand what he was saying. So
The difference is, a month from now, no one will remember.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Oh, I think the Republican, if he ends up being the front runner, the Republicans are going to have a pretty good time with that
one. We'll see if he's the front runner. It was in the New York Times or something. I mean, it was not, it did not go unnoticed. That's his 15 minutes.
It's a jokey story. I think it was in the national press. It said, look at how funny the Democrats in Georgia are.
Well, I learned about it. It was announced on New Year's Eve, and I was at a New Year's Eve dinner and with one of our friends who's been on the podcast before, Bernita Smith, and she said, "So did you read Political Insider today?" I'm like, "No, I've been busy." And she said, "You didn't read it? Oh my God, you gotta read it! You gotta get it! You gotta look at it again!" And so I said, "Well, what's going on?" She goes, "Dale Cardwell's going up on a poll." I'm like, "You know, like, does it have to be a Democrat? Why can't a Republican do this? Always has to be a Democrat to do these crazy things."
So does anyone here know what his message actually is?
Don't know.
I think it was I was freezing my butt off and crawling down off the smokestack.
Well, his general message is that that, you know, get the special interests out of politics, no PACs, and
illegal immigration.
Illegal immigration and tax reform.
Yes. Well, he's running to the right of Saxby Chambliss on many issues.
Yes, this is true.
Well, I think Saxby probably doesn't have a lot to worry about this this election.
Oh. Yeah, because, you know, we got a whole basket of...
Well, I actually commented on Catherine's blog, or Blog for Democracy, and I said, some of y'all need to get together and just go down there and get him. this is not playing well. And we were talking about the New York Times. I think I saw, was it Czechoslovakia? There was like a Czechoslovakian newspaper that had an article about Cardwell. Yeah. I couldn't read it except for Cardwell.
Yeah, that's right. It was one of the international.
Yeah.
Well, besides the Senate race, which we'll have the fun of enjoying for months and months to come, between that and Vernon Jones, we've also got the Georgia legislature, which recently came back into session. There were some interesting events that happened there. Some attempts to overturn the vetoes that Governor Perdue made from the last session, and then some talks of impeachment. And Griff, why don't you tell us a little bit about what exactly happened there?
Well, it's kind of funny because I believe that they came into this session thinking, we got to get in and get out as quick as we can. They got to raise money. It's an election year. Not make a big ruckus. And the very first thing is the House overrides like 12 vetoes.
Before noon.
Yes.
I mean, it was like...
It was like straight out of the gate. Speaker Richardson's like, let's go again. And first time since 1974 that a veto has been overridden. Jimmy Carter was governor the last time this happened. And so anyway, they took these 12 basically insignificant bills, which I challenge anyone to tell you exactly what all 12 do. These very minor things. They send it over to the Senate. And the Senate goes, we're going to stick it in committee. So the Constitution says that the Senate should immediately consider any veto override. That's all it says. So now the question is, what does immediately consider mean? And there's this representative up from Ringgold named Ron Forster, I think it is. And he has drafted impeachment papers against Lieutenant Governor Cagle. And I saw him on TV on Friday, and he had it, and he said, I'm putting it in my pocket now. And he actually put it in his jacket pocket and said, instead I'm going to write a letter about my concerns about this, and we're going to write a letter to the Attorney General to see if we can get an interpretation on this of whether we should proceed. Meanwhile, everybody I've talked to, you know, sources are just laughing at this guy, and this is going nowhere. And it's just, as Senator Cagle put out in a press release, he said he wanted to thank Representative Forster for injecting some humor into a difficult session. So it's funny how they just take something that's so ridiculous, and right off the get-go, we're right back to where we were last April when they couldn't get their stuff together.
Well, I think it's interesting that, again, you know, all last session, the whole tenor was the three-way fight between the governor, the House, and the Senate, and here we are in the next session, and we've got another kind of standoff between the governor, the House, and the Senate. So I don't know if they're going to be able to get anything done
Well, the funny thing is they are actually getting stuff done. Like I said, I think the real plan was to get in and get out. I mean, the speed at which they passed some fairly major stuff last week was astonishing. I mean, within 2 days, they had gutted the gun bill, which you remember that actually drug in all the way to the last day of the session with a lot of rancor. The very next day, they passed the state water plan. I mean, 2 days, two issues gone. And coming up early this week, they will be passing the Grady resolution. So, I mean, they are just knocking them down.
Do you think they're going to get any tax reform stuff going this
you mean the great plan
or any variation of it?
There's going to be a variation of it. I think Governor Perdue in his State of the State said he wanted to eliminate the state portion of the property tax, which is tiny. I mean, it's a big number if you say it. It's $93 million, but it works out to about $30 per household refund. So compared to a $21 billion budget, it's not that big a deal. They can't get the whole great plan through for two reasons. One, nobody really knows what the heck it is.
Cause, well, because Glenn Richards has been very careful not to really say what it is.
Right, and it seems like every day it's some different new thing, you know. And you just can't make that drastic a change in the tax code this quickly. I think everyone realizes that. So they're gonna find some sort of sop to throw to the people, like this $30 a household thing, and that'll be about the end of it.
Do you think they're gonna get rid of that ad valorem tax on cars?
Maybe.
That's the funny thing, because you know, GREAT stands for get rid of every ad valorem or ad valorem tax,
yeah.
And Glenn Richardson introduced something to say to introduce a new surcharge on vehicles. It was like a $10 surcharge to fund the trauma network. So that automatically just turns the plan into, you know, the GRAT plan, because
yes,
it's no longer every ad valorem tax.
Yes, that's true. And that did seem rather odd to me, too. And that is going towards funding the trauma center, which is going to be the next big piece to come through, and with Grady and everything. And the governor said in his State of the State that $55 million towards a statewide trauma center, which I sort of scratched my head, because Grady just got finished asking Fulton County for a $200 million loan. and the governor thinks we can start a whole trauma network over the whole state for $55 million. I want to see the numbers run on that one.
Well, anything, anyone want to place any bets on when the legislature will get out of here?
Oh, I think it'll be...
Really,
I think it's going to be fast.
Let's see. They started on January, 14th? So, yeah, mid-March. They got to be here 40 days. They won't be here much over that.
I think there'll still be rancor over some issues. All the stuff that they're getting through quickly, there were clearly some deals made before the legislature session started. But there are still a lot of issues that have yet to be settled.
And they still have to do the budget. That's the big one. That's the one that sits out there looming the whole time, and that was the one that sort of threw everything off the rails last year.
Yeah.
So about midway through, we're going to have the budget sitting there again, and you know, whether they can get their act together or not, who knows?
I think they'll all come to, I mean, at least the party in control will, I think they'll come together, because they know they've got to get out there and raise money and stump for their, whoever their, you know, their presidential nominee is, and they've all got a lot of work to do.
Well, speaking of presidential nominees, another kind of exciting thing for Georgia, considering usually we don't have very much say in who the nominee for each party's president is going to be, it looks like Georgia actually may be in play for the primaries this year. As Griff Dreef was saying earlier, even Bill Clinton's coming to Macon.
Coming to Macon.
So anyone have any thoughts? Catherine, do you have any thoughts about this whole primary? Want to just walk us through what the state of Georgia is prior to the primaries?
Well, right now I think there's a strong support for Obama, strong support for Edwards, and strong support for Hillary Clinton. Clinton just opened her campaign office right at the end of the year, I guess, or the beginning of 2008. In downtown Atlanta, and they're opening satellite offices around the state. Senator Obama has had offices open in Atlanta and around the state he had his Atlanta office open several months ago over on Northside Drive by the Georgia World Congress Center. And then Edwards has, I don't know that he actually has offices here. He doesn't have a lot of money, so, but he's got a strong network of support. I think it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. Like this week, we've got Edwards was here on Saturday. Senator Obama was here this morning. I guess he gave a really good speech at Ebenezer. I read a little bit of text over that sounded really good. And then the big dog, Bill Clinton's going to be here tomorrow in Macon. And then Hillary Clinton has confirmed that she will be at the Jefferson Jackson dinner on the Democratic Party's big annual fundraiser on January 30th, which is a week from Wednesday. No one else, as far as I know, as of, you know, whenever I left home today at 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, no one else had confirmed. But I suspect, I would be surprised if John Edwards didn't show up for that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but
I think you're right. I think he has to. First of all, John Edwards got pounded in Nevada, yeah. And I mean, he's
less than 5%.
Yeah, it was 4% was the number I read right before I came here. He's got to find a place to make his stand, and Georgia may be that. And Georgia is definitely back in play on both sides. I was looking at the polls this morning, the first polls after the South Carolina Republican primary, which was this weekend, and Huckabee and McCain are neck and neck in Georgia as well. So both sides have got to play to Georgia at this point. It's just kind of unfortunate that we're wrapped up in Tsunami Tuesday. But we're gonna see a lot more attention than we thought we would, that's yeah. For sure.
It's kind of nice. I mean, it's sort of what... I think what a lot of states hoped for with the, you know, front-loading of the... primaries, but they've got a lot of other important states to pay attention to too, with California and New York and Ohio
Actually, what I think you're going to see now that it became so fractured, we assumed that we would have clear front runners on both sides by this point, and I think what you're going to see on February 5th is sort of a regional strategy. Like for example, I think you'll see Huckabee hit hard in the Southeast, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, of course. And probably Edwards do the same thing, whereas you may have what you might look at as the national candidates, like a Romney and people like that will go hard, and Clinton go hard after California, New York, and the big states like that. So I think what you're going to see is it is a national primary, and you're going to see people sort of focus limited resources on places where they believe they can make the biggest splash.
Yeah, well, and I think that's going to be a key, is that fact that, you know, the top tier candidates, Romney, Clinton, Barack Obama, have a lot of money. So they can fly from California to New York overnight.
Whereas Huckabee can't.
Huckabee and Edwards really don't have that kind of money.
Exactly.
So they're going to be focused on, in areas where they can have, you know, like Rick said, more regional.
Yeah, impact. McCain can't really do that either. It's going to be interesting to see how his strategy plays out, because he doesn't have a lot of money either.
He might be able to raise more of it now since he's won two in a row.
He spent a boatload in New Hampshire the week before the primary, like almost $1 million on advertising in a week. And Romney spent like $1.5 million, and Huckabee spent like $40,000.
Yeah, I heard on one of the talk shows this morning, somebody was talking about Huckabee. They were like, he has no money, but he doesn't seem to care.
Yeah.
He just doesn't care. Yeah. He doesn't have any money. His only campaign office is in Little Rock, where he's from. His national campaign director, unless it's changed within the last week, is his daughter. It's the craziest campaign you've ever seen.
It's like something out of a... out of a, you know, Americana movie.
Frank Capra movie.
Yeah, Frank Capra movie.
And of course, the one name that hasn't come up is Giuliani, who gambled on Florida and
he is still down there. I was checking the Florida papers this morning, and he has been camped out in Florida for a long time. He was in Tallahassee last week. He was in Tampa this morning. I mean, he has literally planted his flag in Florida, and that's his Alamo. If he goes down in Florida, he's done.
So if he does win Florida, do you think he's going to be coming to Georgia, or do you think he's just going to be focusing on New York and California?
Yeah, I think he would probably skip Georgia. I'm not even sure has he even been to Georgia?
Yeah, he's been to Georgia.
Has he?
Yeah, he was at...
he was in Marietta.
He campaigned here early.
He campaigned at that diner up at North Side Drive, and because Shelby did a thing about
Silver Skillet.
No.
City. I don't know. But anyway, the funny
it
thing
was forgettable.
I was in Florida about 2 weeks ago, and I'm sure we'll start seeing this as we get closer to February 5th. But you would not believe the amount of advertising going on in Florida right now. I mean, every 5 minutes is Giuliani, you know, mayor of America, 9/11, blah, 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 blah. It is just nonstop down there.
Well, he does have, like, the guy I live with is always talking about how Giuliani's going to be the nominee because he's got so much support in California and New York. He's got all these delegates. He's got all these superdelegates, but as we all know, they can switch in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
To somebody else. And I don't think Giuliani's. I think he's out.
I think he's out after Florida. I think he comes in third in Florida, and he's out before February. He'll be in technically in February 5th, but he'll be done. It'll be Romney and McCain by that point.
Well,
or Romney and Huckabee.
Well, Huckabee. I should say Huckabee. Huckabee will stay around to the 5th, and I think 5th is going to be where he finally meets his Waterloo. He can't run a national primary, which 23 states and or 24 states, whatever it is, in one day. I mean, he may win two or three of those, and then he's going to be done. He's going to be so far behind in the delegate count with no money, and you know, at that point, the Frank Capra dreams just got to come to an end.
Well, we'll see. I guess we'll see you on February 5th.
So yeah,
get out and vote. Well, let's bring it back down to Atlanta, and Joe, maybe you could bring us up to date on what's happening with the Sembler project in the North Druid Hills area.
So Sembler, for those who don't know, is this is really a very smart development firm that builds the dumbest projects in the world. They're very good at going into urban areas and putting in big box stores and with really big parking lots that are practically unnavigable. But anyway, they had a proposal to build a $1 billion project at the corner of North Druid Hills and Briarcliff, which is on a typical day a very congested intersection.
To say the least.
Yes. To say the very least. And and they ran up against a lot of opposition in the neighborhood. So Kathy Gannon and Jeff Rader, who are the CAB's commissioners for that area, representing that area, came up with an idea to hire an outside planner to come up with a master plan for the area. They hired one of the nation's most reputable planners who came in, created a plan based on feedback from the community, and I said from the very beginning that he would come up with a very good plan, and Sembler would come back and say, we don't know how to deal with that. That's actually a good plan, and we don't know how to build something like that. So, and as it turns out, most recently, the school board declined an offer from, they made it official, excuse me, to decline an offer from Sembler to purchase DeKalb County school property in order to build this project. And Sembler said, "Oh well, we were kind of expecting that all along. We'll build without building on those parcels."
Good save.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you think it's going to happen? Does anyone here have an idea, Griff?
I think the scaled down version is going to happen. You know, I think it's down from 30 acres to 10 acres. I think that Joe's probably right. I think they always knew they were going to lose this battle. Those neighborhood associations right there around the Toco Hills, Druid Hills area, those people are hardcore and they are battle tested. And once they started raising hell, you know, it was pretty obvious this thing was not going to go through. So I think you're going to get a scaled down version of it. And it's the only problem with that is I don't know what that may actually make things worse, because you still got that intersection there. You got one two-lane and a four-lane that come together that's already heavily trafficked. And as a commentator I heard one time say, you know, we don't build wide roads in DeKalb County.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't know a lot about what the project is. Is it like one of these
Atlantic Station.
Did they build Atlantic Station?
They did not build Atlantic Station.
They built the place.
They built the Edgewood Retail District.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Edgewood.
Did they do the one up at
Lindbergh?
Yeah, Lindbergh. Yeah.
They built
the
Lindbergh.
Worst parking lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
That place is a nightmare.
It's horrible.
The fun part about the Edgewood Retail District, which we also call the ERD, is you go along that little, what they call the main street, in that development, and there's this one four-way stop, which if you ever stop there, you'll understand what I'm talking about. If you ever stop at this four-way stop, you won't know exactly what to do.
I think I know the one you're
talking
about.
It is the most poorly... I could never fathom, and how many people could really fathom the idea that it's possible to screw up the design of a four-way stop?
Weren't they supposed to be building traffic improvements as part of this development?
Similar?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the plan that was developed by Alex Garvin.
What I'm saying, that, you know, without that being incorporated, if you set down a 10-acre big box development without doing something
right
to that intersection,
yeah,
oh, that's going to be a nightmare.
And where
the Boston Market is.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it would take up that entire corner. The schools, the CAB School of the Arts,
right.
Which isn't going to happen.
The Open Campus.
Open Campus.
Correct.
So it's just going to be the gas station
the
park and
the
Boston Market.
Now, the gas station in the Boston Market, that one parcel is the only thing that was going to be untouched. That was the only...
I mean, you can hear this. This thing is such just a weird, you know... In software development, we used to call them barnacle balls. You know, it's just like all this stuff sort of patched together. And you, like you say, you got a Quick Trip, like, sitting there right in the middle of this billion-dollar development.
It's mixed use.
Yeah.
It's mixed use.
And there are a lot of patches of Atlanta that are definitely starting to understand and to get the idea of the benefits of mixed-use developments. But what Simbler builds is not really mixed use. It could be one gigantic parcel that has some residential and some retail and some office.
Is Edgewood really mixed use?
Edgewood has some residential.
Does it?
It does, but it's not really... It's not really so walkable, and it certainly doesn't adhere to the sorts of
well, it doesn't have
ideas.
Enough residents to make.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just stuck up
to support the retail that's there. Yeah.
There. So if, you still have to have incoming
and
traffic.
And one of the things that I heard about Simbler, which sort of goes into this whole thing of they're not really designed to be mixed-use, walkable communities, because one of the arguments I heard, and it actually makes a little sense, is that one of the advantages of that intersection is its proximity to the freeway system.
Yeah.
Which sort of does make sense, but once again, you're not really dealing with transportation there. You're just...
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times to get anywhere there, too, you've got to, like, drive from one parking lot to the other because it's so spaced out
in
terms of what you're actually doing.
Part of the Garvin plan did include dedicated busway, which would have introduced some quality... transit service to the area,
but that's the other thing. What's the closest MARTA station to that? Lenox, Lindbergh?
Lindbergh.
I mean, you're talking about like 2 miles.
Yeah,
from the nearest rail line. It was such an odd location from the very beginning. I just never really got it.
Oh, I get it. They want all those neighborhoods shopping there.
Oh, sure.
It's a
high income part of town.
Yeah. Yeah, they have their numbers right in terms of the business of the thing.
Right.
It's a very smart deal.
Right.
Well, we'll kind of keep an eye on it and see what happens. It looks like it's going to be a lot smaller in scope, so who knows what it's going to be when they finally do end up developing it. But with that, I think we're going to have to wrap things up. Why don't we start with you, Grift, and just kind of give your final thoughts.
Well, I'm going to do something I rarely do, which is throw out a plug. I'm going to be on a panel at the Atlanta Press Club on February the 7th with Tom Baxter on electronic media and politics. So if you're in the Atlanta area and that interests you, please come down and see me.
I guess I'll throw in a plug as well.
It's plug day.
Yeah, it's plug day. And this is for my job. I work for a performing arts service organization, and we recently relaunched our website, atlantaperforms.com. And if you have not seen any live shows at all recently, now's a great time to check something out and go to atlantaperforms.com to see what's playing.
Well, I'm going to put a plug in to everybody to vote on February 5th, which is a week from Tuesday.
Great. Well, I just want to say thanks to Rusty and Amber and everyone who attended the panel and to you who are listening. And also, I just wanted to kind of give a shout out and goodbye to 99X, which is leaving the airwaves later this month.
Yep.
So it's been a good run, and hopefully Atlanta's really going to miss it. So
Should see the look on Catherine's face right now.
Anyway,
we're all going to be forced to listen to the Burt Show. Exactly. Oh Lord.
Anyway, thanks everyone, XM. And hopefully it won't be so long until our next podcast. Take care.